How do I define leadership?
Confidence without ego.
I never expected things to happen if you didn't work every single day at them.
Hi, podcast listeners. I'm Lillian Cunningham, the editor of On Leadership at The Washington Post. Each week, we talk to influential people about their lives and careers and the lessons they learned along the way. This week's podcast is with Dr. Francis Collins. He's the director of the NIH, the National Institutes of Health, which is the largest supporter of biomedical research in the world. He also previously led the Human Genome Project and was awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom in 2007. The print version of this conversation has already run online, but we're excited to share it in audio for the first time. To start, I'd love to hear how you define leadership, how you think of what that means to you.
Leadership is something maybe you are born with a little bit, but I think it mostly is something you learn. For me as a scientist, my leadership started out in a very modest way by trying to encourage a few graduate students to believe in themselves and to believe that science could be a valuable approach to making discoveries, and then expanded to having the challenge of leading the entire Human Genome Project, about 2,500 scientists. But the theme was the same, trying to develop a vision that would be so compelling that people would be willing to sign on, even if they couldn't actually be totally in charge of everything, because we had to be a team. For me, leadership is also about being inclusive. It means surrounding yourself by people, ideally, who are smarter than you are, and not being afraid of that, actually soaking that up, making the most of that.
I'm curious if you think that that there are unique challenges or opportunities, say, leading scientists in particular.
Science is an interesting area to develop leadership. Science has a currency. The currency is facts, evidence, data. You can't lead other scientists just by telling them what you hope to be true. You have to focus on the facts. And in that regard, I think as a leader in science, you have to have your own credibility. You have to have demonstrated that you're capable also of tackling a tough problem, being self-critical, not just saying, well, this is true because I said so, because that isn't going to hold up. So in science, you have to particularly, I think, be willing to admit not just what you know, but what you don't know. Be humble, be honest about that. Be excited about that. Not be threatened by the absence of information when it's just absent, but see that as an opportunity and try to encourage other people to join you in an adventure to fill in those gaps.
So when you were saying that, I was thinking about inspiration, and a lot of people say that's a huge part of being a leader is being able to inspire. Do you think it still works exactly the same in a scientific setting, or do you think because of the focus on facts and data that there's less emphasis put on the sort of big, grand, motivational, inspirational speech?
Science can sometimes get a little lost in the details. The average scientific experiment fails. The average project is pretty into the nitty-gritty. It's not impossible for people to sort of lose the vision if it's not brought back to their attention. That's one of the tasks of the leader, is to say, you guys are doing great work. You just came up with this new observation. But let's step back a minute and say, why are we all here? What is this about? Science is this glorious adventure into the unknown, the opportunity to discover things that nobody knew before. But it's also a motivated effort to try to help humankind. And maybe that is just by increasing knowledge, because that's a way to make us a nobler species. But maybe it's also to come up with something that will have a practical benefit. And for me as a physician, a lot of the motivation for science is that it ought to do something for human health. But we can get lost in the details and forget that that's what it's about. Especially if things are kind of not going very well. People are frustrated and the experiments haven't worked, or the answer wasn't the one you wanted. Your hypothesis turned out to be wrong, or, you know, your test tubes fell on the floor, or whatever it is. to sort of say, wait a minute, remember? We're really lucky here. We get to do this. We are engaged in a noble enterprise to discover the truth. What an amazing experience to be able to spend your life that way, and especially to see how this might help somebody. That's part of what the leader has to do. Remind you when you're a little bit distracted by the infinite details that what you're really doing is something special, something that probably throughout the course of history, very few people have been given the privilege of doing.
I imagine that that's something you have to do as a leader, not only for your employees and the scientists, but also externally, that you need to be able to communicate why this tiny thing that someone's working on is important and valuable.
That is part of the job. I think I was fortunate to have grown up in the theater and to have a chance, therefore, to be on the stage and connect with an audience and know when you're getting across and when you're not. And that is maybe not something that's taught very much to scientists, especially those who are being groomed for leadership, but it is a really important part of the job to be able to be a spokesperson. Not that you're hyping what science is all about, not that you're promising stuff that isn't going to happen, but that you are in a sober but reasonably coherent way describing what the enterprise is all about and why it matters.
I know I've read about how you're a believer and how much you love music. And I'd love to hear a bit about, you know, these other parts of your life that have maybe influenced the way you think about leadership, the way you think about, you know, creating a meaningful environment for yourself and for the people around you.
I think people involved in a team effort, whether it's science or business, want to be considered not just as one-dimensional cogs in the wheel, but actually fully formed human beings. For me, I consider myself fortunate to have a musical background, and that is something that I tap into for myself when I'm feeling like I need to just sort of step back from the intensities of daily experience as the NIH director and have a chance to explore another part of myself. And I think other people feel that way too. So we should, I think, in whatever environment we find ourselves, encourage that kind of multidimensionality of the people we have the privilege of leading. I'm also a person of faith. Belief in God is an important part of who I am. I was an atheist until I was 27, and then I became a believer largely on the basis of an intellectual exercise that I thought was going to strengthen my atheism and surprised me by converting me instead. And while it is often not the case that scientific conversations talk much about faith, many people who are in the workplace have that interest in spiritual matters, and I think it's appropriate to recognize that that's part of who many of us are. I do think maybe this all fits, though, with the view that if you are given the privilege of leading an enterprise, for me, leading the National Institutes of Health with 17,000 people who work there, you have to be interested in who those people are. They can't simply be means to an end. They may be doing incredibly important work that you're counting on to advance the cause, but they're also human beings. Their value as individuals. That's the most critical resource any organization has, is the people. I worry that at the present time, when we're all under some stress, and federal employees are particularly under stress, that we need to particularly reach out and remind people who are dedicating themselves to these noble but difficult causes that they really are valued as individuals and that we care about what's happening at home as well as what's happening at the workplace. It does seem to me that leaders who are willing to not just be professional figures but also human beings, I think that's a good thing. I think people in an organization want to have a sense that the people who are pulling the strings are not just robots.
What about your one really memorable leadership moment? I know I say the word leadership a lot. I'm sorry about that. But even just anything that stands out to you, you know, in your career or outside of the professional space where you learned some lesson that's just stuck with you.
Well, certainly as the person who was leading the Human Genome Project, there were plenty of memorable moments in that. I will say, in my early years of doing that, I made some mistakes that I think I learned from, and oftentimes that's the right moment to learn the most is when you've done something stupid, not necessarily when you've triumphed. I made mistakes of failing to listen to input that could have helped. Sometimes made mistakes of listening too much to one particular input when others were available that would have balanced the outcome. Certainly remember a turning point in the Genome Project where the strategy had to be, in my view, changed in a new direction that wasn't going to be popular, and trying to figure out how to present that to this very distinguished team of scientists from around the country, in fact, around the world, in a way that they would recognize as painful but necessary. That was a tough day. It was one of those moments where I wasn't sure I liked being the leader.
And if you think forward to what we need to do to create the next generation of great scientific leaders, is there something that stands out?
You know, in science, we don't do a very good job, I think, of training up the next generation of leaders. It's sort of a bit of a slapdash series of events that leads one person to be given that opportunity, another not. And I'm not sure that we prepare people very well when they are given the chance. Most scientists ultimately find themselves in a position of supervising other people as they get to be more senior, but they aren't necessarily given much of an opportunity to learn how to do that well. That's something I worry about. One of the things we're trying to do now in some of our training grants for graduate students and postdocs is to provide more of that kind of input in terms of how do you work on issues such as interpersonal relationships. How do you inspire people to share a vision with you? I think the most important feature, though, is integrity. If you start to sacrifice that, people will not be willing to follow. You may fail in your experiments. You may have a hypothesis that's wrong. You may not get the job offer you were hoping for. But if you maintain that personal integrity, people will see that, and they will want you to come and lead something important.
So maybe this is the last question, a really important one. Do you think that there's a leadership gene? Do you think we'll ever find scientific support for why certain people are just better leaders than others?
I started out saying leadership is maybe partly born, but mostly learned. So what about that partly born part? Are we going to find the gene for being a good leader? No. We may find that there are heritable aspects of personality, it's pretty clear that there are, that may predispose some people to be more ready to take on leadership roles than others. It won't be all or none, but most of, I think, what makes a good leader is something we all have the chance to do if given the opportunity, being willing to perhaps change your own view, willing to make mistakes, surround yourself with other smart people who can help you make as few as possible and really listen to them. Heritability, maybe it's in there somewhere, but most of this is a learned experience. If you'd asked me when I was 7 years old, growing up on a small farm in Virginia with no plumbing and an expectation on my own part that was vastly different than the way life turned out, I would never have imagined that I was particularly well suited for what I'm currently doing, having this very challenging but wonderful, privileged opportunity to lead the largest supporter of biomedical research in the world. So I don't think people have to imagine at an early age, oh, I'm going to lead something in order to have it come true. I would never have imagined, even when I was 27 or 37 or 47, that this task would now be mine. So again, if people listening to this, wondering about themselves, worrying that perhaps they hadn't tracked themselves towards a leadership position, don't worry. If you have the right characteristics, if you have the right dream, if you have that integrity, and you're interested in finding that opportunity, it may just come and find you. And then you have to decide whether to open that door. I had never really led anything very substantial until I got a call from Bernadine Healy, the director of the National Institutes of Health, asking me to come and lead the Human Genome Project. I wasn't sure that was right for me. I liked what I was doing in a small environment of a laboratory quite well. But I met with her a couple of times, and there was a moment where I was trying to say no. And she said, you know, I just got this vision of you with your walker in an old age home, walking down the hall, and I encounter you, she said, with my walker. And you turn to me and you say, darn it, I should have taken that job. She tapped into my own dream of maybe being able to do this after all, even though I was trying to say no. 2 days later, I said yes.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and stay tuned for a new conversation next week. You can also go to washingtonpost.com/leadership to watch our videos and read more stories.